You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Today, we are tackling one of the most misunderstood topics in the pews and the boardrooms alike, the intersection of faith and finance. For too long, we've been told that you have to choose between being holy and being highly profitable. But what if the wealth you are capable of building isn't actually for you, but through you? And of course, you get to benefit too. So today, we are moving beyond the prosperity hype and into the stewardship reality. We are learning how to use the tools of the economy to fund a vision that outlives us. So if you've ever felt guilty for wanting to scale your business, or if you're wondering how to align your portfolio with your prayers, this conversation is for you. And to help us have this chat, I've got none other than Karabo Maimela. Hello, Karabo.
Hello, Mpumi.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm very well. How are you?
No, I'm good too. Thank you. Thank you so much for agreeing to have this conversation. Let's hop right into it.
Absolutely.
So what I've found is many Christians struggle with the idea of pursuing wealth, fearing that it will contradict the love of money. So how do we distinguish then between the greed the Bible warns against and the capacity that we have to build wealth for God's purposes?
Oh, that's such an amazing question, Bumi. For me, what helps to frame my life, my decisions, my Christianity, my faith, how I operate in the marketplace, in my places of business, it always comes down to the very first instruction that God gives us in Genesis. The first one is to be fruitful.
I love that.
And then the second one is to multiply.
So
you need to be fruitful. Mm-hmm. You need to have a purpose. You need to add value into society. Mm. And then not only do you need to do that, but then you need to multiply that value. That is critical. And I think it's such a great way to move in society with the understanding that the very first thing that God instructs humans to do is to be fruitful and it's to multiply. So and multiplication, I guess, is not just in the sense of procreating,
right? I'm so happy you said that. Because that is going to be the next thing I say. Like, people think just have a lot of babies.
No, that's a part of it, you know. And it's a piece of a whole, you know, and it's not a piece that's relevant to all. Because some people are not able to have children. You know, some people are not going to get married. And Jesus was very clear when he said that, you know, marriage is not for all people. Mm-hmm. You know, some people will get married, but some people won't for various reasons. So are we saying that those who are unable to get married or those who can't are not able to multiply and add value? Absolutely. That's not what Jesus was saying at all. He was just saying that there's some people who will be able to get married and by virtue of them being able to get married and or having kids, they'll be able to have kids and multiply in that way. But there's also people who are not able to, you know, and those people also have a purpose, because we're not just put on this earth just to have babies. We put on this earth to have babies and then not only to have babies, but also to add value and to multiply. If you think of the only reason why we're supposed to have babies, if we're talking in the Christian sense, a big part of that is to multiply our thinking and our values onto our kids. And by doing that, we then create a community that's got values that are in line with what God wants in our lives. Yeah. You've got good people, you've got grounded people, and then that then overflows onto society. So that's why the home, the fabric of the home, is so important.
Yeah.
And that's in that it sets the foundation for the community. And broken homes then you result in broken communities.
So true. You know, I love the foundation that you're laying, and I want us to dial it back a bit and talk about wealth as a concept and maybe even understand what it is. And the reason I love that you brought in Genesis and that instruction that God gave to Adam and Eve was because when I hear be fruitful and multiply, two things I'd play for me. One, the idea of fruitfulness, of course, we trace it back to agriculture, right? Or farming or whatever we want to call it, where you have a seed that you put on the ground and you have to do work for that seed to grow. So you dig the ground, you water it after you've put the seed then germinates, but you have to keep cultivating and putting fertilizer and all that, all of that. So there's an idea of you having a seed and working the seed so that it produces fruit. And then on the other end is multiplication, which we really can't help. Yes, you can plant, but how many apples the tree produces is not on you. The idea is that at some point the tree will take a life of its own and do what only it can do. So on the one end, it's work that you put in given the seed that you have. And then secondly, it's the work that you've done doing the work. So when we think about money and when we bring it to monetary values, we hear the idea of investing being the money doing the work for you and you not having to work for the money, right? So let's talk about wealth with that as a framing, the work that we have to do in building the wealth and how the wealth then takes a life of its own if we make the right decisions with our seed.
I love the parallels that you've drawn there between sowing of the seeds and germinating power, right? In that the word says that we plant the seed, but the Lord is the one who gives that seed germinating power. Yeah, even if you look at, if you go back to our analogy of making babies, we have a good idea as to the process that goes into place to do that. What nobody can really understand, or no one has been able to find out, what actually happens once the sperm then connects with the embryo. What happens in there? What is the process in there? That is a miracle. Nobody has been able to really understand what are the physics or the biology, the calculations that take place in order to develop a human being. And if I think about finances, there's very similar parallels there, right? So our job is to, if we're going to look at seeds, is to look at, okay, what's fertile ground here? What do I need to be aware of right now in this current market? So looking at this current market where everything is volatile, we know right now that a safe haven as of call it February 2026 is gold and silver, right? So a lot of people have put money into gold and silver, and the prices are up because the demand is up, right? For that, because people are saying, listen, the world is sort of in a very strange place.
I don't want to be
You
caught
know,
unawares.
I don't want to be caught unaware. So that's now when it comes to, you manage the soil. You manage the soil. You don't manage the seed. So what's important is for us to have an understanding as to what is fertile soil for investments right now. And that will entail understanding your environment, understanding what are the macroeconomic factors, what are the geopolitical factors right now that are driving decisions. But also, what is my risk appetite? What are my risk goals? What do I want to achieve? And then based on that, you make a decision in understanding that there are things that are outside of your control. But what you want to manage is you want to make sure that you manage the soil and not the seed, because the seed will do what it does, right? Nobody really can tell you with absolute certainty that this is the type of child that you're going to end up with by the time the child is 18, right? All that you can do is manage the soil, which is really understanding what are the conditions currently that are driving behaviors, and what decisions you can make that's going to at least put yourself in a position where you can win.
Yeah, absolutely love that. Absolutely love that. There's a time for working where we have to do the work, and there's also a time to be prudent and watch the money work for us. And I guess that's the idea of wealth, is that yes, you work, but then you have the whole idea is that you then build leverage as well, and you don't have to slave away forever working just so that you can be
Yes.
wealthy. And with that, I do want us to talk about the difference between a self-centered economy and a kingdom-centered economy, because when we do talk about wealth, or at least when you talk about wealth, you bring about the idea of it being a tool for kingdom impact. So can we
So can we
differentiate
just
between self-centered economy and a kingdom-centered economy?
Sure. So I mean, self-centered economy, I guess, as the phrase suggests, it's all about you, you know. Everything that you do is really for your benefit. It's a very narrow minded way of thinking, because you don't think beyond beyond yourself, you know, or even beyond your family. But if you are thinking that, okay, I've got an opportunity to be blessed with means. I would like to be blessed with means. Upon me being blessed with means, what does it mean for me? What does it mean for my family? Because we need to agree that our primary responsibility is to our family first. Okay, it's to our family first, because that's where we minister most clearly. So that would be first. And then after that, then your community, the community around you. And then it grows from there to, you know, outer layers. So it starts from within, then it grows out. The more that you've been blessed, the greater you want to make sure that you can extend your influence for the kingdom. And that is my understanding. And once you understand, that means that money is a tool, is a means of exchange, and can be a tool that's used either just to gratify your own desires, or it's a tool that you can use that's going to be to the edification and the furthering of God's work. Then it changes how you look at money, because money is, you know, people have said that money is freedom, that money allows you, it gives you the freedom to do
It
stuff,
really does.
right? You want to go here, you want to go there, you've got the freedom to do that. You're not prohibited because of your lack. So, and I think that's an important, you know, thing that we need to keep in our minds, is that once you don't have money, you experience lack.
That's true.
And the issue with lack is that not only does it prohibit you from assisting other people, you are compromised yourself, and your family is compromised in the process. So we have a responsibility as individuals, as Christians, to not only look at financial growth as a self-centered tool or a self-centered idea, but also how can it further the gospel and further God's work?
You know, so many thoughts are coursing through my brain as you're talking. And you said something about when you don't have the money, what happens with the lack is that it distorts views, right? It distorts your view of God, because you're just like, do you even care? But also other people's views of God. And I'm going to bring a story that's not related, but I want you to think about it, and I hope our listeners will think about it this way as well, or that the story will lend itself to the point that I'm trying to make.
Sure.
Job, right?
Yes.
He is in the test of his life. Everything is gone. He was known to be this wealthy man, this man who had everything going for him, and all of it is stripped away except for his
Yes.
wife. His
Yes.
friends come and his friends say, "Surely there's something you did to God, because there is no way that your life can be so miserable, or your children, dude." Your wealth, your health, come on. And we all know that he did absolutely nothing to deserve that. But this is the thing. The people who knew him to be a righteous man, his friends who knew him to lead a life that looks very contradictory to his circumstance right now, started thinking, maybe there was a misstep. Maybe your God isn't the God that he says. And I'm bringing this because when you read Deuteronomy, the woke among us who say God gives us the power to produce wealth, we don't really understand why he did that. Understanding that the Israelite nation was God's, I don't know, God's lighthouse for when people, when all the other nations look at this nation, they turn to him, right? And so the reason he was giving them the power to produce wealth is so that people will be like, and like, how are you guys doing it? What is it that you don't that what is it that you know that we don't know? What should we do? And that conversation and their way of living, which was really obedience, becomes the magnet that draws them to God. And you know this is true because when King Nebuchadnezzar wanted to burn the three Hebrew boys and they didn't burn, instead his boy was burned, he was just like, oh, okay. I'm going to need every one of us to worship their God. And just that act alone drew a heathen nation to a holy God. And so when I think about wealth becoming a tool, is it's not just in our best interest for us to be wealthy. So like people will be like, but what principles are you applying? How are you spending an entire day, an economic day at that, in church singing and praising, and you're still, how does it work? And that is the whole point, right? They'll say, but you're not involved in all the corruption and the brown envelope, and how is that happening? And we point them back to God's principles. And I think that was the point. That's how it becomes a tool when people understand that there is an economy at play that doesn't involve the corruption and the shrewdness of this world, and it also won't leave you lacking if you apply it. And all of that then points back to God.
Yes, no, 100%, and I love that. You know, as you were speaking, I was reminded of a passage in scripture that's, I believe, is often misquoted, Philippians 4:13. It says, "I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." So how we've interpreted that is to say, I can do everything if God gives me strength. Nothing is impossible. Which, and I may be, you know, a little controversial here. I mean, this is my view, is that I'm 40 years old. I cannot play in the NBA. I'm 5 foot 8. I've never, it just doesn't, it isn't practical enough. You know, I've built a career in finance over the years, and banking. I don't have, you know, I haven't put in the time that's necessary for me to play in the NBA, firstly. Secondly, I haven't been imbued with the natural or innate gifts and capabilities. So I'm not going to play in the NBA.
No, however you set your mind to it, it's not going to happen.
However I set my mind to it, it's not going to happen. I'm not quick enough. I mean, 40 year old, there's probably maybe one or two 40 year olds in the NBA, right? So that verse has got a, in my mind, has got a different you know, meaning. Because Paul says, I've had much, I've
I've
had
been
plenty,
amazed.
I've been at lack. You know, but I've what I know is in all things, you know, all things work out for good. So he basically says, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, you know. So and all things work out for good to those who love. So there's something around that, you know, you can be in lack and you can have abundance, you know. You can do all those things. God will keep you in perfect peace in either extreme. You know, it's also this notion that's to say, because we also have a warped view and understanding about money, right? We'd often say, if you are blessed materially, God has blessed you. You
Yes.
are favored.
Yes.
You're favored by the Most High. And if you haven't, then the understanding is no, you are cursed or you haven't been blessed. But
Yeah.
that's not the case at all. There's many people in the Bible who had means,
Yeah.
and others who did not have means. But God favored them all. So that's another way to look at it. Because we do have different gifts. Some people have the gift of being able to make extraordinary amounts of money. What we do know and what we are certain of is everybody has got the capability to improve. So if we talk about being fruitful, everybody has got certain things that are going to allow them to be fruitful. And everybody has got an ability to multiply that which they have, whether that's talent, money, gifts, whatever that looks like. You have the ability to do that. And that reminds me of, this parable of that Jesus shares about the talents, where he gave everybody a talent, which is a talent is really like almost like a piece of currency, right? Like a coin in those times was a denarii. A talent was basically could think about a bunch of coins. So Jesus speaks of this parable where a bunch of coins are given to three different people. The one person, basically, buries it, and the other person is able to go into a market and he's able to double it, right? And then I believe then the third one was, put it to market and was able to quadruple. What's interesting in the story is God gives everybody a base to work from. Everybody's got a base to work from. You can use what God has given you.
Exactly.
Everybody's got a base to work from. There's one, so the one buried it. So the one did nothing with it. And when the ruler came back, he said, "No, you evil, you slothful, you evil person." Because there's something that's very evil about not using what God has given you and increasing that. Right? And his answer was like, "No, I'm scared. I was scared. I knew that you sow where you have not reaped. And I was scared, And then the ruler replies, "You evil and slothful person. You should have taken my money and you should have put it in the market."
The least you
So
could
in
have
other words,
done.
the least you could have done. So it speaks again to this to two ideas. The first one is we have not been given the spirit of fear. Right? That's the first one. We need to overcome being scared to do stuff that will advance us forward, firstly. And then secondly, we need to multiply that which God has given us. And then thirdly, it's an understanding that because of our gifts, one was able to double what was given. One was able to quadruple. Do you understand the levels here? So one person was endowed with gifts, with capabilities that allowed them to quadruple what they had. Whereas the second guy, he was just able to double, right? He wasn't able to do as well, but there was growth there. And that's the important thing that we need to focus on, is that guys, we need to grow. We should not be afraid to make decisions that will help to advance us materially, because this passage speaks directly to advancement materially, and not really in spiritual terms, even though we know that that's also it can be applied as well.
I love that so much. For the next thing I wanted to talk about, I am remembering this lady. Over the weekend, I was watching some documentary of a female entrepreneur in the United States. and she's in coaching and all of that stuff. She was formerly a lawyer, and so the law and everything about politics is very important to her. And she says, you know, one of the drivers of my business, the reason why I wanted to make goo gabs of money, is because I wanted to be able to donate $1 million to, I think there was a lady who was running for an office in a political office, and she's like, I wanted to be able to donate to her campaign. That's the kind of effect I wanted to have, because if we're going to complain about, oh, women, black women are not being treated properly, we need to put our money where our mouth is. And I remember another lady as well who went back to school to, because she'd been doing a lot of work with the UNFPA. She went back to school to do her master's because her mentor told her, it's great that you want to do the work, but in all honesty, you have to be in the room where the financial decisions are made so that the work has mobility. And I want us to talk about how, when we are financially well, when we are able to, when we have the capital flow, the kind of difference we can make in shaping culture in any industry, whether it is media, tech, politics, healthcare. And I really wanted to talk about the idea, or to talk about how much more valuable we would be in all these spheres of influence if we had the financial muscle to put our money where our mouth is.
That would be a game changer for us, because we do it with the view that we're not doing it for ourselves. I do love this idea that all everything that we have, our gifts, our talents, everything that we have been given by God, it belongs to God, right? It's not ours. Even the very lives that we've been given, right? That's why we need to live for Him who made us. And we can't we shouldn't be doing as we please with everything, because we are stewards. You know, there's someone who's ultimately responsible. And that's the same with money and with ideas and how we look at money. You know, if you look at money with the understanding that, oh, okay, look, this is not what I have is not mine. These how best, you know, and I've got someone, this money belongs to this body belongs to these ideas, this way of thinking belongs to someone who is, yes, very kind and gracious, but someone who expects a lot from us. Right, someone who expects us to think about other people and not just ourselves. Somebody who expects us to think about how do we make life better for those around us. You know, he expects that. Once we have that frame of thinking, it helps us to make decisions that are in line with that. And I couldn't agree with what you're saying, you know, more in that the influence is in different ways. You know, influence can be in thought leadership. Influence can be in reputation, how you've lived your life. Influence can also be with money, you know, and not just that you have it, but how you made it, and what you intend to do with it. Because when you are sitting in these rooms where decisions are made, your voice matters. You
It
know,
certainly, certainly does.
absolutely.
It's so true. People really pay attention to the pauper saying something, and will absolutely listen when the rich person is saying the same thing. It's like, but I said that last week. Is it because I'm not Oprah?
Absolutely, you are so right. I think people, and I guess just humanity is just predisposed to I guess just being, you know, materialistic, in the sense that there's just certain value that we place on certain things materially as opposed to others, you know. Whereas we know as believers, we often look, I guess, beyond the material. So we
Yeah.
want to know what's the essence of it, that what is the essence of what you're saying exactly?
Yes. Is there any
But
truth to it?
is there any truth to it? But to the unbeliever, it's often, how can you change this materially for me, actually? You know, it becomes very, black and white. It becomes very rigid. People really don't care. I'm talking unbelievers. They don't care about all the other, the other softer stuff. You know, they want to know, practically, how is this going to affect me? What is the benefit? And to be honest, they would often put more respect on you because they deem you as having more economic value. And based on that, they make their decisions, they put their trust, and so
Yeah,
that also, it definitely plays out. And for those that God entrusts with that blessing, they need to be aware of that, because some people, at least this is my view, some people will only notice you or see you once they have a sense as to what you can do economically for them, even though you may be able to bring much more to the table than that. But for some people, the gateway to them is through economic means. And then once you've opened that door, then you've got an opportunity to say, yes, look, guys, this is just the facade. But if you want to see the really valuable stuff, it's in the stuff that money can't buy. And that's actually what grounds me, right? But let me introduce you to that as well.
You know, and while I get that sometimes it is very superficial, I think there is merit to it though, because when you think about the parable that you gave of the three guys who were given talents, right? The implication, and I think the implication is very glaring. It's right there. The one who was given the one talent buried it, meaning they were lazy, slothful, like you said. But the one who came back with 10, we know that this person worked. They applied themselves. They sought the ground that was fertile. They did the work. And so I think perhaps what happens in our subconscious is that when we see somebody with money, with a lot of it, rather, we think, oh, you must have had an idea that you were willing to bleed and sweat for, that you put your capital into. If you had there's this idea that you must have done something right. You must have done it consistently. You must have done it in discipline and in earnest for this to be the results. I remember when I was still in varsity, this guy, it was careers day, or like all these companies came to tell us about what they do. And this one guy was like, the reason why I will hold two transcripts in my hand and go for the one who has higher marks than the one who has lower marks is because I'm making the assumption that the one with the higher marks is putting in more work, that
I see.
they are attending class, that they understand what is going on. The one with the little marks, I'm like, are they really trying? And I guess maybe that is what the implication is when you see those results. And perhaps this is why we need to also focus on having wealth, because it gives you a seat at the table. And not for anything conceited, but because we understand the perception that comes with it, that people will pay attention to you because you must be doing something right. And how much sweeter when they find out that the right thing you are doing is just following God's principles.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think I mean, if you read Proverbs, the wisest man that ever lived, he talks about, you search for understanding, the beginning of everything is the knowledge of God and all of that. He speaks a lot about, multiplying what you have, building wealth, working hard. There's really an evilness that is associated to not putting in an effort, right? And not doing what you want to do. However, for me, there is, and I do agree with what you said. I do, a caveat, just to put a caveat on, to say that you've got two transcripts. Yeah, I like that analogy that you used. if you'll allow me just to go to that one. You know, you've got two transcripts in your hands, and you're gonna go with the one that's got the higher marks, as opposed to the other one. So the assumption is that yes, that the one with the higher marks, you know, worked well, worked better. That is an assumption, and it very well may be the correct assumption. However, the one with the higher marks may just be blessed more intellectually. It may even take them less effort to get to that amount, right? So, and that's the other thing that is always, I guess, you know, something for us to be mindful of with these things, is in that some of these things are not they're not directly proportional to the effort that you put in, you
Yo,
know, right? So some of these things are just because God favors you in a certain way,
Karabo. Hey.
you know, you're able to do better. You're able to do better than somebody else. It's not because you've worked harder than them. It's just because God has blessed you with a certain ability that allows others to look at you with favor as opposed to somebody
Favorably.
else, which is why also we cannot be ever arrogant
Oof.
for anything that we
Oof.
have or our abilities, because we didn't choose to have them. They were just endowed upon us, you know. And because of that, we looked at with favor in certain circles, oftentimes not because of our own brilliance, but just because God has decided, I'm going to make you brilliant in this area, I'm going to make you brilliant in that area. So the brilliance or the gifts, nobody's got control over what gifts they have and how brilliant they are. What we all have control over is how much better we get with those gifts, developing those gifts to be better. Because, you know, the other thing is, you may have someone who is super talented, but also they don't, over a period of time, they ride on that talent and they don't do the work. And then you've got someone who doesn't have that talent, right? But every single day
They
they
work
apply
at it.
themselves, they work at it. So the compounding effect of the discipline and the hard work over a long time, what may happen, and what happens in some events, is that the one who was less talented or less gifted, just
Rise
because
up
they kept on working,
above.
they rise above, right? Because of that consistency of effort and talent and. But also, these things are so complex as well, because
There's so much nuance, you're right.
there's so much nuance to it, Mbomi. I mean, like some people just have, you know, were just born into great homes
That's
where,
so
you know,
true.
they've got inherited. I wish I was born in a home where I've got,
Listen.
you know, a trust fund
Me
that I could, you
too.
know, work off from. And some of them, you know, the likelihood that you'll catch, you know, a child who happened to be born to Bill and Melinda Gates is very low. It may not be impossible, but it's unlikely. You know, but with hard work, with persistence, with a prayer for life, we all have an opportunity to be better and to increase our standing in society, which I guess is really what you're alluding to, right? In that's everybody can understand that. Not everybody will appreciate spiritual matters, but everybody will understand, okay, you move from here to here. You move from there, then you move from there to there. Then you move from, you know, what happened? What's the driving force behind that? And all of those things, I think, you know, maybe even matter more than the actual result at the end of the day.
I absolutely love that. And I know that I have to let you go. So maybe we can wrap it up. And it's like going to be a bit controversial and possibly even a tangent from what we're talking about. I was having a conversation with a friend about how when people talk about success and making it and all of that, they'll tell you work hard, wake up at 5 a.m., all those things. And they won't tell you this one thing because it doesn't make them look good. It doesn't make them admirable anymore. They can't sell you on this one thing. And that one thing, I don't know if you'll phrase it differently, but I'm so curious to hear your thoughts. It's luck.
Like,
You know what you
ooh.
say? I love that you brought in that balance. It was, yeah, sure. That assumption is great, but it's not all encompassing. It is missing so many other views. What is your take on luck?
Oh my goodness. Do you know, Solomon touches on this in the book of Proverbs, where he says, you know, we can work hard, but chance and luck happens to everyone.
Oh, yeah, he does.
It does, you know, and we can even go as far to say as, you know, it's God's will or not, you know, and our job is to position ourselves for the
I
best
love
possible
that.
outcome. So
I love
be
that.
ready
Yeah. In case luck comes for you.
in case luck
Yeah.
comes for you. You
Yeah.
know,
Yeah.
you want to be prepared. I mean, if you know you are in the health industry, you know, maybe you're a personal trainer. You want to make sure that you're eating right all the time, you're doing your training, you at the gym during the times where you know there's influential and successful people at the gym, you know, so that they may see you. The last thing that you want is to rock up to the gym, you're
Yo,
ill prepared, you're
yo.
ill disciplined, so you look like, in fact, you haven't been working out. In fact, you maybe you went drinking the night before, and the smell of alcohol is still on your breath, but you had, you know, you're not putting yourself in the position to be successful. But imagine for a second, you've been diligent, you've been doing your training, you've been eating well, you sleep early, you wake up early, you're at the gym where you know that these influential and successful people are there, and it just so happens when you are there one day, there's someone who happens to be there when you're there, and they see you and they say, listen, I'd like to give you a contract to work with me for the next year or so. That changes the trajectory of your life. You know, preparation and destiny, they meet each other at a specific point. The tragedy is that oftentimes, you know, destiny arrives, but it finds you ill prepared.
That's
So
so true.
you are unable to capitalize, you know, and God is the one who, in my view, who decides that, you know, and that is it's such a overlooked, you know, aspect of being successful is luck or having the opportunity at the right time. Professor Scott Galloway, I don't know if you know him. He is a professor at, I think, New York University or University of New York, and he's a successful entrepreneur. He's a thought leader, and he speaks of this idea of, you know, when he was born at the perfect time, and he doesn't just leave it there. He says, so I was born in America, at a time where it was the fastest growing country in history. It was doing so well, but also he was born as a white male, which at the time was basically hitting the lottery, right? And he also goes further to say, and I was heterosexual as well. So he's a white male, he's heterosexual. He was able to get into a very good university at the time where the qualifications to get into that specific university were not very high at that time. And then when he left, he was able to work for an investment bank, you know. And it's different today, where you've got so many more people who are going through university, wanting to get into Ivy League schools. And the laws now in America also different, because, you know, there's, you know, affirmative action laws and. So he also acknowledges and he appreciates that there are certain things that just happened,
Oh, so true.
you know, in my
Outside
favor,
of your control,
outside of your control. And that's, again, when it comes to the issue of money, there's the preparation, which is key. But all the preparation in the world, it doesn't mean anything if you don't get that opportunity, if you don't get, a little lucky. And for us, we would say who believe, we say if God doesn't shine on you at some specific point in time. So it is really so important, and I don't think it's controversial at all. There's a part in opportunity, a part in finance, a part of success that's really, in my view, is a part of it is supernatural, some of it is opportunity, some of it you're just born into the right home. Some people are naturally brilliant, but they never get that opportunity, to actually put their brilliance to work, right? So our responsibility is to do the best with what we have control over, and then to make sure that we are ready for when that opportunity comes, but then to also continue to pray and ask God to guide us and to lead us, to put us in the right direction, just to make sure that we are also true to our goals and what we want to achieve, and all of that. And God is faithful. There's a peace around effort, which is important, but there's also a piece around, and I think maybe our talk has really revolved around that, around what's also out of your control as well. Both of those things are so important.
Oh, and I'll ground it by actually referring to the scripture or reading the scripture that you referred to, Ecclesiastes 9:11. I have observed, and this is the New Living Translation, I have observed something else under the sun. The fastest runner doesn't always win the race, and the strongest warrior doesn't always win the battle. The wise sometimes go hungry, and the skillful are not necessarily wealthy. And those who are educated don't always lead successful lives. It is all decided by chance, being in the right place at the right time. And what Solomon isn't saying here is that you shouldn't train to be the fastest runner, or you shouldn't build the muscle to be the strongest warrior, or that you shouldn't be wise and skillful and educated. Be those things, so that if you find yourself in the right place at the right time, it is to your advantage.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, Karabo, thank you so much. This has been so insightful and very delightful. Thank you so much.
Mpumi, thank you so much for the time, and thank you to the listeners. I've thoroughly enjoyed this communication that we've had, this discussion. I would just like to maybe just leave with this, maybe parting word to say that may we endeavor to be better. May we endeavor to grow, not for ourselves, and to grow in all aspects. Let's grow spiritually. Let's also grow materially, because it's important, and not just for ourselves, but for He who made us. May God bless you all. May God bless you too, Mpumi.
So good. You have to go.
Thank you so much. Yes.
And with that, I am Nompumelelo Bonani, and I hope you've just made sense of your business. Fresh mercies tomorrow. Ciao for now.
Adventist World Radio, SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.